Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That time of the week again, the Rugby League rant, fifth and last. Put on your headgear, chuck in your mouth guard, and get ready for an hour of nothing but NRL talk. And here we are for the fifth and last NRL World podcast. The Penrith Panthers, Brock, back-to-back premiers, 28-12 over the Parramatta Eels.
Yep, we're not shocked, but I was shocked that the game was such a whitewash, to be fair.
Had higher hopes, like we said, all week, very excited. Battle of the West, meeting for a fourth time, playing in a grand final back in Sydney, full house, and Penrith were near perfect in the first half.
I don't know about that. I thought the first 15 minutes they were a little bit clunky. I know they got the try to Crichton, but there were a few sets there offensively where they struggled a little bit. They pushed some passes. Parramatta did a pretty good job, but in the end, just the weight of possession and the weight of field position just told on Parramatta, didn't it? Well, and they essentially just played Penrith into form offensively, and yeah. It's probably not so much that Penrith were clunky in that first 15. You've got to give Parramatta some credit, but you can just see how fatigued Parramatta got, just trying to hold back the wave, which was Penrith.
Well, we talk about that cycle game, how relentless they are. They just never look like they get tired. Yeah.
We're seeing it now. We've sort of got some highlights up now. Toto scored in the 17th minute, and that was when I really thought, okay, shit.
Well, we said it after the first few sets. They just immediately started to push them backwards and win that field position battle and just, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was also on the back of the Dylan Brown kick, or was it Dylan Brown kick after this where he kicked for Moses?
Yeah.
I just thought it was a really...
Desperate to know.
It was a really poor time, particularly when Parramatta weren't building any pressure, so... Anyway, let's go through the game. I think...
Yeah, before...
Those who are listening out of love because, you know, we like to break down footy, but... Yeah. This was a pretty cut and dry sort of result, but
I've got some stuff here.
Still enjoyable.
Yeah, we'll go through it and give some wraps to some certain points, but a quick rundown for the rest of the day. No surprise, state championship. We said we thought the New South Wales Cup team would eat the points and win regardless. 44-10, Penrith were dominant again in that grade.
Yeah, and they could have won by more.
The Devils had one little sort of good period, I guess, where they were held up out before half time, and then
try disallowed, which would have been 6-6.
Yep, Jacob Gagan dropped the pill. But overall, both started a bit sloppy, and it showed at the end. I looked afterwards out of curiosity because we said they were a bit slow. The completion rate for both teams was 69% and 62%. So
yeah,
wasn't a great game. But you look at Penrith; they took O'Sullivan out. They lost two players at the 27th minute, and Cole and Chris Smith, and with 15, they still won 44-10.
Yeah.
They were very dominant. Taruva was outstanding. Hopgood, who he tipped up for a try and to play well, was great. Lou Catahan in three, scored one himself. Their forwards, no surprise. Eisenhuth, Blacker, Fall, steered him around. They were just dominant all across the park.
They were, yeah.
Ahern had a few nice moments. Milson, Tamusa, etc. But yeah, overall, they were just...
They didn't look fit enough. They didn't look mobile enough. They couldn't handle the pace of the intensity.
60 missed tackles. They were blown off the park. Yeah. Even Riki had a really nice day. We said there on the day, like, there's a few spots.
Yeah, but we've seen Penrith all year. Yeah. That wasn't the best version of Penrith. No way.
And even Jenkins, who I tipped, he played hurt. You could tell he only had four or five touches. So realistically, they played a man down, and lost their halfback.
Throw O'Sullivan in.
Yeah, and then they lost two players, and they still won 44-10. So
yeah.
We were very confident the week before, like we said, they would just chew the line, which was 12.5. They did more than chew it.
Line actually got out to 13.5, I think.
Also, some happy punters, and I said this, looked at this today, and listened back to what we said. We obviously were on the Panthers. We both had Dylan for the Clive. He got that. We tipped him the Knights and upped him to score. That happened, and she got man of the match. He couldn't bet on that, though. And in the cup game, we talked about the points. Jennings, Hopgood, like we tipped a few of them. So if people did get some cash on.
Yeah, we got a few messages about...
Hopefully you lined your pockets yesterday. because there was plenty of good tips in terms of some cash.
I got a few emails, actually, because I put in my column, which came out on Monday, just get on Dylan Edwards to win the Clive Churchill. So I think there are a few...
Jumped on.
Yeah, jumped on. Again, I'm not one of those guys that says, oh, you know, I said this or I said that. I happen to get that one right.
I'm not saying in that regard, but usually you pick one or two, but across the three games, there's a few winners there.
We had a good day yesterday.
If people were in on the previews and like we were and you try to win yourself a bit of cash, it was a good day.
Yeah, we had a good day yesterday.
It was a good day. Touching on that women's game, similar deal, 32-12. It was a bit more competitive than the state championship. They went in down 14-6 at half time, and when Samima took that quick tap to get it to 18-12, you thought maybe we've got
Parramatta had some chances there.
But Newcastle
couldn't apply pressure, could they?
Yeah. Took them to pieces in the end. Upton was a class above. She was outstanding.
Just went out of Parramatta. When they couldn't get 18-all and they had the, you know, that myriad of chances or a little period there where they had consecutive chances and bombed them, you just felt like, you know, they sort of conceded that they weren't gonna get there.
Well, full credit to them to get there after almost missing altogether. And then you look at Newcastle, who won the Spoon last year, went out, purposely recruited Boyle and Upton, and then they've got a few players of their own in Johnston and Southwell, and they were outstanding.
Yeah, and look, that's the last version of like sort of a hybrid girls competition.
It's going
to
be 10 teams.
Yeah, that's going to be legit. This is now the taking off of women's rugby league because getting to 10, I know the concerns everyone's going to have around, oh, well, it's going to thin out the talent, and that's okay. But the only way you get talent is to develop it. The thing with the women's game is it's not like the men's game at this point in time where you've got pathways all the way through.
Mm.
The women's game has to develop girls in the NRLW. They have to develop them in first grade.
Yeah.
To an extent. So probably for the next two years, I think the standard may not be what it was while the teams are so compressed.
Across the competition.
And talent thick. But I do think in the long run it's going to make for a fantastic product and hopefully one that can eventually align with the men's competition, and you know, you see full-time female athletes. I think, it's probably, I don't know, 5 to 10 years away. Just going off my gut. But we can't get there straight away. But and then you look at your pathways, like the girls' game's taken off. Traditionally, like when girls' footy first sort of came to popularity, maybe 10 years ago. Like I know, we've got a girls program at school, and a lot of the teams are just sort of Western Sydney based.
Yeah.
But now, Hunter Sports High School actually won the they won the St Mary's Cup this year, which is sort of our Opens CHS competition, and they were a small, skinny side. Like there's been traditionally some big bodies running around in the girls' game, very physical sort of game, but the Hunter girls were supremely skilled. So I think there's a lot of good stuff happening in pathways, a lot of schools are now running programs, a lot of junior clubs, a lot of the junior leagues have got good competition. So the girls game's in a really, really good space.
Your prime example is Jessie Southwell. Like plenty of people talked about her, but yesterday she's 17 years old, she was great, and she's a half. So you know, obviously her sister Hannah's a very good player, clearly she's learned a lot playing in the backyard and growing up. But if there's more girls coming through like her that are starting early and playing to that standard with those other girls, it's going to, you know, come to fruition pretty quick.
Yeah.
But overall, they were too good. Like I said, Parramatta had their moments. Anderson early on the half, Preston, etc. Cherrington and Samima laid a great platform, and Gail Broughton was good again. But overall, the purchases, like we said, they made in Boyle and up to Newcastle to turn things around with their local talent in Johnston and Southwell, etc., paid off. And Clydesdale was good as well, the back row. So 32-12, pretty dominant at the end. 7 tries to 2. Pretty much the goal kicking made it look probably a bit closer at times.
Yeah.
They weren't, wasn't an easy day. A couple on the wings for Kira Dib to kick, but big result there. But let's break down that first grade game. As you said, 28-12. No surprise. We thought he would, and he did. He started with Kenny, RP. He brought him on a little bit earlier than usual. I think it was 17 minutes. And on the other side, no surprise again, near Corey started. Madison went back to the bench, but early on, like you said, sort of that feeling out, that cycle period, you know, they got at Cleary a couple of times, no surprise. They tried to get Reed at him with his leg speed, fell at his feet. On the flip, I thought Penrith were outstanding on kick pressure. Like Moses was getting hit by the props, the back rowers, Fish got him, Leota got him.
That was overstated. That came down to ruck speed.
Yeah.
Heard a lot of people, again, getting into Parramatta about, they weren't pressuring Cleary. Go and watch ruck before.
Yeah, it's because they played the ball and trying to get line speed. You can't be offside, otherwise it's six again.
Yeah. So. There are a few there, yeah, where they missed the kick and the markers didn't do their job.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they just lost that tackle consistently. Once they roll through,
you can't get, like you said, yeah. You have to win that ruck to be able to get at them from marker or generally a line.
Yeah.
Half the time they were barely back when he was getting the ball. And he was walking and setting himself into his kicks. Like, he was probably pressured two or three times all night.
Yeah.
Moses, on the other hand, they were getting strangled and he was kicking off the back foot under pressure and they were constantly bombarding him.
Yeah.
They did really well holding their discipline. I don't think they got pinned once, but they were certainly letting him know that they were there.
Yeah.
Kikiaos, Martins, these sort of guys, Leota, were all just constantly after him. But
yeah.
They had that cycle early on. I thought Moses come out with some intent. He was hitting everything and everyone. But they just, we talked about, started to win territory. We started to see them edge their way upfield. You know, you're looking at Parramatta once they started to feel that strangle. They were trying to shift on play three or four, getting desperate to try and save the set, getting at their back rower, kicking off sidelines, which isn't exactly great. It just sort of...
It unraveled. Once they felt scoreboard pressure, they went away from their plan and they were not able to put Penrith under any pressure, put any fatigue in Penrith.
Mm.
And it just turned out that the game just morphed into this perfect storm for the Panthers and they were on as well.
Mm. Well, we started to see that breakdown, like we said. There was a set there where they literally went from yardage 100 metres and passed. On like last tackle, and then I think Parra had one little moment there where they finally sort of had a good set and shifted, and I think it was Luai and Tago maybe had their backs turned and they stormed the short side and it was covered up by Kenny and Yo, but that's probably the only real passive moment I saw. Eels got a penalty off that and they tried that play to kick that you were talking about, which when I saw that I was like, this is a worry. People were saying that's great and it's creative, it's, and you're trying great. Something It's timing. It's a grand final and you've just timing. Been cycling for 15 minutes and you've given the ball straight back to a team that's chewing up field position and getting on top of you. You need to hold the ball down their end.
Camp there and for play 10 minutes.
Because they did score. That to them the whole fucking half.
Yeah.
And the one time they got an invite in there, they literally kicked the ball. Like,
it wasn't a bad play.
No,
it was a bad play at that point in the game.
Tyre cleaned it up and the thing was they were trying to catch it with whatever, but I just looked at it and thought it's nil all and you've thrown that out there. Like,
wrong time.
It's not exactly the time I'm sitting there going, yeah, this
was
is...
Was the score nil all when that happened?
That was, I'm pretty sure that was nil all.
Yeah.
I thought that was before the first points from my notes that I've sort of got here. But once that happened, that really just baffled me. It really did. But Penrith also, we talk about this all the time, how relentless they are and kick pressure and play 1-2. They're good on their end, but also defensively. I've never seen a team that are better at that fork lifting. They don't just catch... dance and go to ground on that spot. They are the best at good first up contact, drag you back 3 or 4 metres, slam you into the turf. Like, any time Parramatta's set looked like it was starting to go somewhere, anyone has a good carry, Penrith just put the forklift on and drive you back. There was multiple sets there where they barely made 20 metres. And then on the flip, they're kicking and Edwards and Toto are getting 20 off their first carry.
Mm.
Looking at that, what I've just said there and kicking, this is pretty much the start of it, like I'm saying, when that cycle starts to happen, Sivo got jammed. They were doing the two pass again to sort of save the sets and you could feel them starting to pressure come on. Got a point here that it got to the point where they'll kick from their own 30 off the back foot. Penrith was starting on the 35-metre line and the back three, Toto and Dill in particular, Staines did his job, but they were linking up, they were moving the ball, taking those metres, and then before you know it, we talked about that cycle starting to come in. Yo was getting timed, similar to what you're saying, because they're winning those rucks and they're passive. Yo gets a three-wide pass. He digs in nicely. Dill drops Critter back under because they've overcompensated the chase there. I think it was Lane that got held up by Yo and the outside guys sort of come across and Dylan falls over and straight through Critter, beats Gutherson. And it's 11 minutes in. You just felt that ascendancy starting.
Yeah.
That's 6-0. And from there... Yeah, it's sort of just, they never let off. But I looked at that play again, and we talked about this before we come on. Their lead runners on their shape is outstanding. Mossesi ran a nice lead to start with and was genuine, and it held up those first couple of guys, which allowed them to get to that space. And once they chased really hard and released on the inside, that drop was just so simple.
Yeah.
But they're clinical in the way they run their shape. So there was multiple lines across the night where if you slow-mo look at the lead runners, they're genuinely doing their jobs and getting through and taking defenders out of play or getting them to make decisions. But they
also did, like what we spoke about with being really, really close.
Mm.
Parramatta were very, very tight on their inside shoulder. So Penrith ran those nice little narrow shapes with the lead runners really smacking the inside shoulder to ensure that it opened up that outside space, which was...
Yeah.
Yeah, really good coaching.
And when you're winning that ruck like we're saying about, we got exactly what we were talking about. You get to play at those edges and isolate players one-on-one. So many times, Penrith were doing those nice two passes and Yo was hearing the ball a lot and they'd tip into Martin or tip into somebody and they were just getting one-on-ones and carrying for 15, 20 metres and dragging bodies with them and half breaks. Like,
yeah,
they were just kicking the door down constantly, but... No surprise off the back of that first try.
Yeah, you're right. It was eight and a half minutes.
Yeah, they kicked. That's why I looked at it and was like, really? They've had no footy down here.
It was the first time they tapped and gone into Penrith territory.
Yeah.
And they pulled that off.
And the half, they basically had no footy down there. It's the one sort of chance they got and they kicked it straight back.
Strange play.
That's a play like you do in the last 20 or 15 or something. You're down and you need something.
So that happened after 9 minutes and then Penrith scored.
This is what I'm saying, That lead from Laiota on the inside, another nice lead there, and then they've had to chase out hard and Critters just poured back through that space.
So, 3 minutes later they concede.
Mm. But then after that, no surprise, their sets after points, just perfect. They roll straight down. They have a set straight after that where we've seen exactly what we talked about in the preview where unfortunately Wonga Blake was going to see plenty of bombs. Gutherson and even Moses, the first kick he had covered for him. There was five or six times I counted watching it again where they were doing the pendulum or getting back there and ensuring that he wasn't isolated for those bombs.
Yeah.
Gutherson ended up having a really rough night, made some errors, but my God, it doesn't help when you're basically admitting that you've got a bloke there that you don't want to catch football.
Yep.
But Moses saved him on one of them. But the perfect set after points. Gutherson then, I think he kicked from dummy half. They got caught on a sideline again because they just couldn't get any yardage. And I'm sitting there going again, they're just strangling to death. They need to break this somehow. Penrith then legit play two shift the ball 40 metres easily. Just three wide. Yo digs into that line again. They're like long because the rucks are held up and Martin literally almost carried four blokes to the try line. They were just tearing their left side apart, which I thought they were going to be playing more to the Parramatta right hand side.
Yeah.
But they found a lot of love sort of shifting the other way. And, Cleary's last pass wasn't great. Play five, they throw one back into the middle and it was dropped. I don't know who was hitting, but it was almost forward. But that was 15 minutes in. And at that point, like Sean Lane was hands on his hips and blokes were down on the ground. I was like, this is really worrying. And again, watching it now today on the TV as compared to when we're live, you see a lot of that stuff you can't see at the ground. I was just like, wow, it's 15 minutes and they already look like they're absolutely torched.
Yeah.
So that definitely reflected a lot worse. Like I said, once I was sitting there watching it on TV. And yeah, after that, I think Dill in that 10-metre space, kick chase, Papali, Penasini, Toto again just brings it straight back to the 40. Their set starts and their roll was just absolutely incredible. And then straight after that, I think Arpy come onto the field. They had a tip play to the right-hand side. They rolled Kenny back under and I counted seven bodies on the negative. So straight away, Arpy's jumped out, gone along. Nathan digs in, Kickout runs another great line to hold up those players and it's a 3-on-2 for Luai. And even with the ugly tip on that Tago got and it went behind him, he still crashes over in the corner. And that relentless thing again where we're just talking about the cycle and they were just rolling upfield so easily. And with the field position they were getting into was just incredible. But, at this point again...
Well, it wasn't incredible. They do it every week.
I know,
that's the staple.
To that standard in the grand final, they find another try there.
But that is the thing. Like, they made yesterday not look like a grand final.
No,
they made that game just look like every other game.
They went through them, literally just rolled through them, which was incredible. Mm. But again, the leads, the shape they ran off the back of just that ruck speed we're talking about, with the same point. You can't kick pressure if you can't slow down the ruck and you isolate your edges or you get more one-on-ones and make poor decisions when your middle can't win a ruck.
Mm.
So anytime they sort of went to a shift shape, and what we talk about all year, Penrith don't waste plays. Penrith weren't waiting to attack them. Penrith were moving the point of attack, getting a quick play of the ball and then jumping straight back into shape. When you've got a player where Yo touches it, Nathan touches it, Arpy touches it and Luai, you call it stacking, don't you? when halves, fullbacks, all are involved in a play or touching, like they stacked multiple times where they were getting all those guys to touch the footy.
Yeah, like I think their attacking patterns are quite predictable, Penrith. Like they like to get to that right,
well, it's like
right
Melbourne,
hand trim, you know, and then pull the trigger left, which is, yeah, and they just get
stop
their,
it there?
They get their two halves and their fullback around. Well, mm. Not a lot of teams can.
Yeah, exactly. It was like when the block thing with everyone was, ah, Melbourne do this and Melbourne do that. It's like, well, it's one thing.
I think it's so much about stopping that play. It's about stopping
the rucks to get that play. But that was...
You know what's coming, but it's how fast they do it and how well they execute it.
Mm. Well, that was 10-0.
And how much fatigue they put in you.
Oh, that's the thing. That was 10-0. After 19, and that was what I've just written here after that. Like, the relentless cycle, the territory, the pressure, the build-up, and just them slowly starting further and further upfield. Like, they're trapping Parramatta with 20 and 25-metre sets, and then Dylan and Toto are catching it and getting 20 metres off the first carry back to the 40.
Mm.
They're playing play two, basically, on halfway and coming straight at them in good ball. And then because they're winning those rucks, they're jumping straight into shape with Yo handling everything and their halves linking constantly. Like, they were just on the front foot, but...
Yeah.
At 10-0 at that point, after that 20 minutes, and again, looking at some of that body language, was genuinely worried it was going
to get... It's just a lack of line speed as well. Like, Parramatta were just losing the ruck so much that they just could not take any time away from Penrith.
No, none at all. After that, same sort of deal again. They just carry and get themselves out, and two passing, you know, kick out just absolutely destroys Moses. They double tip back to the middle. They get lanes inside shoulder. They end up 50 metres out, 5 metres out, next play, and then they get a drop out the next set. They've literally rolled 100 metres after points and then forced a drop out. And that
was one here where Cleary goes through.
Literally, again, you're sitting there going, like, holy crap, like they've just scored a try. They've got to 10-0. They've rolled 100 metres and then Gutherson kicks the ball out.
I don't mind the short kickoff there. You got to get it in play, but make it a contest.
At that point, let me know.
And when Penrith kicked the goal, I was like, that's almost good for power.
Yeah. This
reset thing. And just get back in that. In 12 that zip
after
I was
20.
Surprised there. I know why they took the two, Penrith.
I know. I would have taken the two.
Mm.
But yeah, I felt they did leave some points out there. But 22 minutes in, 12-0. Gutherson, you know, it's not a great result, but I understood why they were trying to do what they were doing.
Yeah.
Same deal again. Next set after points, 60 metres, and then Gutherson has to cover for Wunga Blake again. Eels middle just looked gassed. They've done all the tackling. They were moved around the ball, the point of attack, the way they changed things. They were going coast to coast, getting out of yardage, like you said, constantly on the back foot, retreating, having a reset. Just really felt like they nullified, in particular, those guys that we knew they wanted to start well with. And that really hurt Parramatta as well, because they weren't able to generate
Definitely.
What they wanted to generate through, you know, Borlo and Campbell Gillard and Murata, because Penrith were just so dominant and gave them absolutely nothing. But we're even just watching it here, just the ball movement, and yeah, they just took the petrol out of them so bad. But they made a 15-metre set after that. Kikia, outstanding kick pressure. I thought he did a really good job on iron, and it was that same story again. Toto, I think, collects it on like the 20, gets it back to the 43. Six again, because they got a touch off Madison. Staines almost goes in over on the right corner because they rolled upfield. He sort of pulled the handbrake, and, you know, like, they're just relentless there. The Dylan had a run and an offload, and I couldn't believe they held on. But they get to Toto. He cuts back in, beats four players and forces another dropout. And at this point, again, just thinking, this is three or four sets in a row, multiple try savers. How are they holding on? And then what happens eventually is that pressure tells. Gutherson jumps the short side. Nathan Cleary comes the open, sees that nobody's home, and he rolls that grubber through for Scott Sorensen. Mm. And at that point, it's sad to say, but basically I was already feeling negative at 12-0, but knowing it was going to be 18-0, I thought it was game over, because I just never... They're the best defensive team in the comp. They never get tired.
Well,
I think
I said that too.
They're relentless.
Oh, Parramatta going to score 18 points.
Well, forget even that. Like, are Penrith going to give up that lead? Like, once they got 18 zip after that period, you're like, fuck, this is over.
Mm.
They're not going to relent. They're just not going to relent. And again, through what we said, those set starts and their front loading and their defense and fort lifting and the way their props played, like, Leota was on a mission to kill everyone, but Fish was incredible as well. Their back, like, yeah. But they got Gutherson again. They got him week one. They got him again this time, but that was a real big death blow after three or four sets, forcing a couple of dropouts where they really took advantage of their handiwork. And, you know, that's 18-0 at the 28-minute mark. And not feeling too great about that. Poor old Guffson wasn't having a great night at that point, like I said. And by this point in the game, they'd made 60 more tackles to the point we're saying why they were gassed. And
but I'd argue there where Sorensen scores that they shouldn't have two markers, Parramatta.
No, they shouldn't.
Guffson should have dragged a marker. Well, it's not that. It's inside five. Like, they're at about the 5 metre mark. Mm. I'd like to see a deep one marker there.
Even the other
Guffson
thing.
Needs to drag.
Why has he put himself on the left where they've only got... Oh, they got three, sorry. Now
they've got three. That's why. So drag the marker out, put him there, and then you're okay on the open side.
You only want to play with one marker inside 10.
And I think here he realises and goes, oh,
he's gone.
Yeah.
And Nath's done great digging in the line there and making sure no one's there to cover it.
Yeah, well, worst case scenario, it's
another repeat
set, yeah.
But at this point, like
and
I said,
it makes Gutherson think about short side numbers, which means occasionally he might have got the numbers wrong there, and then they take the short side. So it's the game within the game.
Huge credit again to the way they rolled up field, and like I said,
they've got to do a better. Like Parramatta, they've got to do a better job trapping that kick.
You can
wax on about the superlatives of Nathan Cleary, but both players there get an opportunity to
hit him.
To get your foot out and trap that kick.
Even that, they had time to pressure him. They didn't pressure him at all.
Yeah.
You
can't let that kick through there.
They were sort of passive all night, even when they did have decent rucks like that one. They could have definitely pressured him a bit more, but 60 more tackles at this point. They were gassed. They got absolutely shredded. They'd only had four tackles inside Penrith's half after 30 minutes. The possession was 65-35.
They did that to themselves.
Exactly, but it was all earned by Penrith. They got those repeats. They rolled them. They did all that to Parramatta. That's what I'm saying. It was one of the most dominant halves of football I've seen, particularly in a grand final, where one team just absolutely blew the other side apart. And they had no answer for it. But, after that again, they roll another 50-metre set and get to the kick absolutely perfect.
I have to be honest, like 18-0 at halftime flattered Parramatta.
It did, and that's the point.
That flattered them. It should have been 30.
There were some try saves and a couple of moments where it could have certainly got a lot uglier. But the back end of the half... they get a penalty, I think it was play 4 or 5, where one of the only blips, I think, Tay goes on for too long. Luai starts abusing the touchdown. At that point, like, why are you...
It was dumb. There was an elbow. There was a forearm in that tackle.
Oh, there you go. I didn't see that, but...
it was right in front of us.
Straight away again, Oregon and Brown, I think, last 10 there. Gutherson, like, they come out what first play there after a couple of carries and they have an obstruction. They're two plays into that set, first time.
Yeah, Lane runs into Cleary.
You look at that again and go, the second time you've been down here, you kicked the first time and now you've gone two plays and you've given the football straight back.
Yeah.
So instantly, Penrith kicked themselves straight back up into good ball. Gutherson under pressure. I think he knocks on. Critter then gets absolutely hammered by Nathan on play 3. It was a poor pass. He slammed him trying to run a line and that was one of those moments again where I'm thinking they probably should score here. And that was sort of those few only moments where they were bad. But then Lenu comes on as well, along with Sorensen, did a good job. He started rolling straight away. Gutherson misses a kick, which almost leads to a try, but Wonga Blake knocks it out of the way of Kikau, who, again, was excellent.
That was a huge play by Wonga Blake.
Oh, biggest player he made, because he certainly, like I said, was getting saved on those kicks. Gutherson was doing a heap of work to try and cover for him. But the drop out there... they go short and they finally get a result. It was the third time they tried it. Two times it didn't pay off. Luai again, head high tackle, lets him out of their half. They get to the 50 and then they clean it up right on their goal line with Luai. But realistically, like I said, coming at halftime, all that stuff, which said 65-35, just absolutely belted in the cycle. No pressure built at all, no opportunities. Penrith were just relentless. To'o. Dylan Edwards, the way they started the sets, their props were just next level. Like I said, Moses really had a bee under his bonnet. The pressure game by their back rowers on kick chase, Yo's involvement because of the way they were rolling to those halves. I thought not that he's been quiet, but obviously it's been an interrupted back end of the year, but I thought he was really prominent last night with how much he handled the football. And he was able to do so off what we talked about. They blew up the ruck and they were constantly on the move, so Arpy was able to just work the ruck, hit him. They were playing three wide and just going coast to coast, constantly moving the football.
Yeah.
They just completely, in that first stint, took those forwards out. And I also read some people going at halftime, did Brad Arthur stuff up by holding off on his interchanges at specific times? Well, I don't think he did. I just think the game was gone by that point. Like, those props play 60 minutes apiece. They played their normal stint or close to, but I don't think making those changes earlier for Oregon or that really would have made a difference. They were just completely blown off the park. And on the flip, we said they needed to be good in in kick return that they weren't. Sivo got jacked every time he touched the footy. Simonson, that's why they were doing those desperation shifts on play three or four and landing on a sideline. They're trying to save the set with their edges, getting one-on-ones to get a nice kick, and they were getting pressured off those sidelines because, as we know, they're not places you want to be kicking from.
Yeah, they just went away from their plan. Mm. They got rattled.
So,
or they didn't have one.
That pretty much sums up the first half. The second half, there wasn't a lot more to it, but similar deal. The first sort of 20 minutes is what really saw things, you know, deteriorate. But first set, crush a tackle at the Penrith 40 by Madison. It's not exactly how you want to start. They kick at Wonga Blake. Again, I thought he dropped it forward to Papali'i, but they somehow didn't get the call on that one, which really surprised me. But sure enough, Eels again pretty much kicking from the 20, catches on the 20 and brings it back to the 40. I'm like, here we go again. It's the exact same thing. Like, the way they're starting their sets is ridiculous. And kick-outs, kick pressure, it was just another one. And Gutherson, for the fourth or fifth time, had to cover for Wonga Blake, and then he takes the next carry and drops the football.
Mm.
And instantly, Penrith are inside their 10. And I'm, at that point, obviously worried that we know what's coming next. And sure enough, they go sideline to sideline, tram to tram. Yo comes up with a bit of a bust late in the set after being under pressure. And this is probably the one controversial moment that we talked about before. Kikau runs that lead when they generate that 3-on-2 for To'o to score the second try. And you thought that should have been a no try.
Yeah, it should have been. Because he runs into his space on his outside shoulder. It's been a penalty all year. I understand.
So you don't think...
The people... Yeah, okay. So, yeah, go and say what you're going to say.
I just thought, when I watched it on a replay...
You thought Moses initiated the contact.
I agree with you. But to me, he gets caught in the chair and then he jumps last minute.
I agree with that. But we fucking wax lyrical on about we want consistency and then everyone's happy for that to be a try. You're all kidding yourselves. And I thought the pass was forward anyway from Tago to To'o. To'o was laying down waiting for it to be disallowed. Like... Anyway, this is the thing. Stop bitching about consistency when you're happy for that to be a try. Because all I heard today was, oh, you know, it's good that they allowed that. Okay. Well, you know, in round one next year when someone whacks someone's outside shoulder off, everyone will be jumping up and down because it's not a penalty. Yeah, I don't know.
My main point
was... Who initiated the contact? Well, Viliami initiated the contact because he was there.
Well,
he was in the outside space. And if you watch the line, he actually closes into Moses. In that situation, once he got Moses in, he should have stepped off his right foot and gone away from Moses.
Well, I thought he didn't pull up on his run. I thought Moses very late.
I said he was through the video ref said he was through the gap.
Well, I didn't think
he wasn't through the gap. If he was through the gap, Moses wouldn't have been able to touch him. It's fucking ridiculous. It was such a dumb call.
So that one obviously went up on the board.
It doesn't look it didn't affect the game.
No.
But
which is probably the only thing you could say for it, but
but look, if that's disallowed, right, and then Sivo scores when he drops it...
Yeah, it's a 12-point swim.
Yeah, it's a 6-point game.
Potentially get their first little 12-point
game,
sniff,
sorry.
But in the end, like you said, they were very clinical. Any error was punished, and they punished that error again, like you said. By the interpretation, probably should have been a no-try.
But like everyone's saying, oh, you know, Moses sort of grabbed him and dove. Of course he did.
Yeah, well...
Of course
he
did.
He knew he was fucked, basically.
But... if you want to eradicate that, don't do it on grand final day because that's been a penalty all year.
Mm. So that was the 40.
I agree that they need to look at that. And they've just... The criteria this year was very much inside shoulder, outside shoulder because they're saying it's a defensive decision. No, the defensive decision was Moses to go in so hard on his inside shoulder, which was the wrong movement, right? Which creates a space for To'o to score. But he should then be able to get back out and at least compete to try and go to the corner post.
Mm.
But he was denied that by the fact that Kikau was in that space.
Well,
if Kikau had gone through the space and gone past Moses, we're not even talking about
I think that's the point, though. He'd never pulled up on his run, but I think because he was stuck in the chair.
He was there. He was in his space.
Yeah, he's jumped and initiated it knowing he was fucked and he was in the chair. Like, he had no...
I agree with that. So I agree with that.
It doesn't
impact. That's not the rule. That's not how it's been interpreted all year.
Yeah, well, I think if you're going to put an actual proper... football.
What he should have done is not grabbed him and tried to go across and just bumped him.
But I think he knew.
But then what would have happened is if he didn't fall, no one would have even looked at it and they awarded.
Had to jump from that flat chair sitting position just to initiate the contact.
And this is the game that we've created.
He was so desperate
that you need to exaggerate your defensive or lack of ability to defend in some situations, and the game rewards it.
Yeah.
So if you want to go away from that, do it as a whole of game thing, not just fucking pick and choose when you want to say, well, that was shit. You know, that was diving or whatever you want to call it. That was gamesmanship. But at the moment, that's the game. That's the way the game's interpreted.
Yeah. Well, again, every error was punished, and that one, rightly or wrongly, went up on the board.
And we'd spoken about that, about how tight he gets on his inside shoulder.
Yeah, well, we're talking about Papali'i. He might have to make a decision, and that's why Pennacini is someone...
But it's not Papali'i. Like, Papali'i can only go as hard as he naturally can.
We talked about it during the week.
Moses shouldn't have been that tight on his inside shoulder.
But we talked about it during the week because people...
He was so tight that Viliami ended up on his outside shoulder.
Yeah, but we talked about it during the week because people were saying that Pennacini had the most try causes. Most of the tries that are going out there are because of what happens on the inside.
Please.
The bloke gets left in the lurch.
This is numbers, man.
So it's well,
I understand what the numbers are telling
you. To look at a stat and go, they score in that space. And well, it's generally what happens on the inside, which is the reason why they score in that space.
Yeah.
That's stupid to go, he can't defend. It's like, well,
as I said a few weeks ago, the best thing to ever happen to Penrith was Moses smashing Kenny Bromwich in round 25 because he got a stiffy over it. And every week after that, he was so much tighter on his inside shoulder and wanted to go in and fucking smash the lead.
Yeah.
But good coaching by Penrith.
22 zip. At the 48th minute, like I said, every error was punished. Luckily, they didn't need Nathan's goal-kicking as much because he didn't have a greatest night from the sideline. He's usually very good out wide from his preferred side, but two of them he missed. So, set after that, no different. 50 metres, perfect set, get to a kick. Sivo gets jacked. They have a strip penalty, which I didn't agree was a strip. I just thought he's gone in to hit him and he sort of had that loose arm contact and they challenged it and they were successful. So, I thought that was correct for Penrith. But they got the ball back and then the Eels again just continue to hurt themselves. Two errors in their own half. Gutherson has to clean up a Pennacini drop, and I think Tago not long after that ends up going for the HIA. They get themselves sort of out of yardage and he cops a shoulder in the face, which was more just an accident. So Semin saw his first action, like we talk about. We didn't think he'd be needed unless they blew the scoreline out or that to roll him in. So in that situation, that was the case. And that off the back of that set and that stop where Parramatta got a breather, they finally got a decent set start. They got up to about the 30 from Sivo. Madison come up with an offload. Brown was three in then and got like a six again. And they had one of their first chances inside the Penrith 20. And they covered really well. And Semin come up with a really important defensive decision fresh on the field. So I thought that was a pretty big moment for Penrith. And showed obviously that they were going to do both sides of the ball as we expect, and they're the best defensive team in the comp for a reason. But he cleaned up Gutherson. They got another opportunity after that with a six again, but again they just scrambled. They started shifting. They had a nice wraparound play which ended up leading to getting Staines to come up into that space, and it looked like Sivo was going to go in for all money, but Crichton come up.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With a great cover tackle from behind. He should have probably passed a lane, but that was another big moment.
Should have scored.
And it, again, just sums up the night. Why they were so good with the football and had all that possession, the few times Penrith were asked to defend, they not only did they defend well, but they came up with a try saver.
Good to know your opportunities.
So, Sivo losing that one was a big moment. And not long after that, dropped the football. Chance obviously blown. Three or four sets. Penrith cover again. They just roll and hand it over on the 10 metres, just too good. And then a grubber play by Reid Marnie, play two or three, when they were just trapped. And we had a very Sattler-esque tackle by Dylan Edwards, which was a great, great effort. Charlie Staines didn't have the toe to go with Simonson, who was moving louder in that vision. Full credit to him, was chasing very hard on the inside. But Dylan Edwards, what a tackle.
Yeah.
And poor old Simonson ended up ending his night. I think he must have landed hard on his AC joint or his shoulder, but that's one of the best grand final tackles you're going to see. And he was excellent on the night, but that pretty much just sums up Dylan Edwards as a player, that play.
Yeah.
He's not your Tedesco, he's not your Latrell, like we've talked about, but...
But just, that's the underrated element of Panthers. Yeah. Like they, that's what they do, they value that. They value every...
Yeah. Well,
Oh, I know they fell away a little bit in the last five. Yeah. I conceded a couple of late. They wouldn't have been happy with that.
No, 28-0.
Yeah.
And garbage time, they started playing Harlem Globetrotters footy, but that, those sort of moments, well,
the kick from Marnie was on, what, play two?
Mm. They were just trapped. They're inside their 10.
Yeah, but they started to throw caution to the wind a little bit.
Yeah, they needed to.
Mm.
But that, like I said, sums up someone like Edwards. He's carries early in the set, getting the kicks on the full, taking 20 metres, pushing through the middle, cover tackle. That was a huge play, but huge tackle. The defence, like we said, in the few moments they had to turn up, they did. They covered everything. They saved a try. They've saved a second try there off a huge line break. They never switch off on that side of the ball. If anything, Penrith values that side of the football more than they do their attack, which is the reason why they are.
They definitely do.
Yeah. The team that they are, but yeah. Off the back of that, they have to roll him off the field, which obviously hurts. That mistake, again, punished. Arpy rolls 20 metres out of dummy half because they're going. Yo with another one of those nice wide tip-ons, gets it to Nath, who digs into Dill. They create another two-on-one where Staines ends up crashes over, and we talked about it again earlier, the leads. Crichton's lead was absolutely fucking outstanding. He got Murata near Corey to follow in. After they did good work holding up on the inside, but that just opened things wide up for Staines to run in there and did well to obviously get past Dylan Brown, who come and covered, because I think Guffson had been caught up. But all night, anytime they got one of those shift shapes, like I said again, if you watch them a bit slower or go back and look how genuine their leads are, whether it be the middle lead, the back row, anyone for them, they so good on their shift shapes and the way they run their shape.
Yeah.
But they pulled them apart again, and anytime they had the opportunity, just absolutely shredded them. So that point there, it's 28-0, and again, similar to you, I thought they've probably left some meat on the bone. But they roll again, perfect set. Fisher Harris got penalised. They challenged that one again. No surprise, they were correct. They won two challenges. Guffson challenges a bomb, fails. But then Penrith, unfortunately, have a Parramatta moment. They had an obstruction on play one. So they tried to challenge that and finally lost theirs. And it's at this point there's a few stop and starts, and you could really feel the air sort of go out of the game. But
well, the air was out of the game.
The Eels from that point, that's when things opened up. They started offloading. You know, there was a lot of chain passing, which we expected to see earlier. They were going coast to coast with their forwards. You know, Dylan was doing some good clean-up work there. But, yeah, RCG, after they had a few little moments, that ugly cannonball, I wasn't a big fan of that. Wasn't a great tackle. But Penrith kick, they get a knock-on. They get good ball. Again, they had some opportunities. It looked like they had sort of found another opportunity where Nath goes straight through off the scrum when Lange dropped it, but he obviously got held onto by Moses and just dropped it short of the line. That would have made it 34-0.
Mm.
No doubt in my mind. So that was kind of another one that sort of went begging. And
probably the third one that they, let Parramatta off the hook with.
Yeah, after that, I don't have a lot more because it, like I said, sort of turned into that.
Well, petered out.
Globetrotter thing there. There's a few more moments where I was like, just proved about Penrith's defensive effort. Kick out a great clean-up off an offload. Leota had that cover tackle, which saved a try on the Dylan Brown line break. And just they had those few moments in defence when they had to go along with how superb they were in attack.
Mm.
And that pretty much summed them up. But Sivo had another error during a bit of a scramble. Those cover tackles like we talked about. Toto, 30 metres after, you know, cleaning up a ball and then got a penalty for that strip off Gutherson. Like, they were relentless probably until that last 10 minutes. And then off that, Eels got a penalty. 5 minutes left, Jake got on the field for, you know, his token run. The offloads start to go and Isaiah Papali'i cuts back in field, gets between Kenny and Coruscant, gets to Gutherson, they get that try. And then not long after, Grubber again, Papali'i picks another up, the ball's flowing, another offload, and Penasini, a nice kick back inside, but it was just garbage time. It was good to see some of that footy, but they just weren't allowed to play it until basically Penrith allowed them to. And that was after 70 minutes of football. They were shut out of that grand final.
Yeah.
And even in the end, when they got some football and Penrith sort of did relent, or they had a few moments, they still ended up being outpossessed 56-44. Penrith ruthlessly completed 86-70 to Parramatta. And we talked about on the night how important set starts were on both sides. Not only did they jam them on the other side, but the kick return meters, Penrith 330, Parramatta only had 120. So when I kept talking about before, the job that Toto and Dylan did in particular.
Yeah, but also where they're catching, how they're catching. I get that. We spoke about them in the preview. But
Their line speed, their setup.
Talk about the meters. It's more about where and when they're catching and how they're catching. And
Penrith are getting on the full and cover. Like, they just, they're so good at what they do. And then the way they tee off, like, Parramatta probably weren't as good play.
Yeah, but Penrith are putting height on the ball and landing it and catch and landing on you as soon as you catch it.
Mm.
Whereas because Parramatta aren't winning the field position, they're having to kick long, which means they've got to chase further and gives Penrith the ability to run back for more metres.
Yeah.
It's more an indication of field position.
Also with that, they forced three dropouts with that field position. The errors finished 12-8, and I dare say that Penrith would have bet a lot less errors up until that last little period where they made three or four.
Yeah.
So it was probably more realistically, you know, almost 12-4
at garbage stage. Sure. Yeah.
But overall, they dominated North facets. I think Dylan, you'd agree, is a worthy winner.
Easily.
He was outstanding. Oh, you know, tell you what, then on rewatching it, Brian Toto would have gone very close.
I disagree. He was good. But
I think Nathan...
I would have had Moses.
Nathan was good without being outstanding. Had some good moments.
Nathan was very good.
Yeah, he had a few errors as well, but I think the props were outstanding. Fish was just mental, 200+, and carried all night, good kick pressure. Mossesi, like you said, carried well, but defensively, he whacked everyone. Yeah. Yo was great.
He was my second best player.
Kickow and Martin, I thought, were great. Their kick pressure, it's more the small stuff, again, that you see when you watch a game, and Sorensen and Lenu did what you want them to do when they came on. They made an impact. Lenu rolled and got him good rucks. Sorensen scored a try, and it was good. Salmon did it, you know, he only got his token sort of stint there, and Arpy obviously did exactly what you were hoping for when he got on too. His first touch was an involvement in a try. Stole some metres, which led to another try. Great deception. Overall, you couldn't rap them enough, but as a team effort, collectively, in particular with their defence, they were magnificent.
Yeah.
You couldn't say anyone.
Dominant winners.
Like Tago and Staines and all those guys, smaller parts, but, you know, Tago, the two times you need to execute, got to the tries. Any catch that Staines took, he did his job with his, you know, his carries, and he finished off the opportunity he had. As a whole, that was one of the best team efforts or collective team performances in a grand final.
Yeah, certainly in recent history.
On the flip.
Probably since the Storm smacked the Cowboys.
It was harder to find a lot of positives on the flip side. I'll give Reid Marnie a rap. He had to do some defence because they obviously were blowing away, but I think he made 58 tackles or something like that. He got absolutely jammed.
They were just outclassed.
Thought Papali'i had some nice moments when they finally got some footy, but again, they targeted that edge heavily.
Paulo and RCG didn't win the middle early.
No, they weren't allowed to. They just got blown away. And I thought Madison had an okay game, but overall, like you said, that their halves weren't allowed to play. Gufson didn't have a great night.
They just didn't have the right temperament. They didn't come up with the right plays at the right time when they were under pressure.
And moments like that early play two kick really worried me, and it reflected.
They took a short side at one point there and got tackled on last play.
Yeah.
They just lacked any polish and...
Patience
and composure, I think.
They were completely taken out in the first half. Like,
Penrith rattled them.
That first half was ridiculous. Full
and crap. At 18-0, I would have gone in there as a coach, not happy, obviously, but I would have gone in there going, the scoreboard isn't as bad as what that half was. So you can sort of, try and build a narrative to how are we going to get back into this game? What needs to happen, And
full credit, though, again, to Dylan Edwards, because a few years ago, obviously had a rough time, had the yips a little bit, wasn't playing that good of football, and there was...
No, I didn't see this in him.
Some sort of questions about him. I was probably the hardest when they had Burton and Luai about playing someone else at fullback and not knowing if they could win a comp. They've proved that with the halves in 9 and the 13 they've got, they don't need him to play that role. But all the other stuff he does, like we just said, he's the biggest credit I can give him, not just for the energy and the yardage, he's the closest person, I think, on kick reception to Billy Slater in terms of effort of getting to footballs and catching them on the full and taking full advantage. He tries his absolute best to not waste any opportunity to get to the ball. Yeah. And chew up the yards. He is also super effective carrying like play two or three through the middle. He doesn't just take a yardage carry or kick returns. He'll double up in sets. He'll go in, play two or three, go straight to the middle, use his feet, get down. Plays like that, cover tackle, sum him up. And his passing is getting better. They don't use him as much, but he had two try assists on the night where he chimed in on the back line because they obviously play middle services you talk about where Nathan plays from the middle and he swings to Dylan or Luai, who plays the halves on the edge. But his night was outstanding. And I thought last year, watching that game, we said Nathan was absolutely perfect last year, so it was hard. But I thought he was a very close second that grand final. And probably
Nathan Cleary?
last year, I thought Edwards was very... I thought watching it back, he was outstanding. Yeah, yeah. But Nathan was perfect last year. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
This year, I thought... I was hoping they wouldn't do what they usually do, which seemed to favour a half. Because when Nathan had that no try, I thought, if he scores that, they probably do give it to Nathan. Which I wouldn't have agreed with.
Mm.
I thought it should have been for Dylan. But overall, like I said, their pack and their team in general was just outstanding. But a huge rap to him. He didn't get picked for the Australian squad, Dylan. I thought he might have had some sort of look in. That probably would have been a real cap off and a reward for the player that he is. But there's one thing they do know. He's certainly not underappreciated at Penrith. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think we give them full credit for winning in two different ways.
There's like a lot of full credit going on here.
What?
You, full credit.
Last year, under duress, they went the long way. They did it with their defence.
Yeah.
This year,
they're good.
Back-to-back, healthy. They roll in and they do it in a dominant fashion with their attack.
Yeah.
And again, we've talked about the Roosters, where it took a long time to get there. People in our group have brought up, would they beat the 2017 Storm team, and others are saying other back-to-back teams like your Brisbane's and your Canberra's, they've certainly put their name into history.
Yeah,
they have. By going back-to-back the way they have.
Yeah.
And winning the amount of games they've had in the last 2 years as well.
Yeah.
They've been outstanding. For Parramatta, I guess our question, like we said, where to from here? Can they improve next year?
Back there next year.
With the players that are leaving?
Yeah.
You got anything else for the grand final?
No. I think we've gone into, enough detail on a game that was, pretty clear cut.
Yep. Well, let's review the season of these two teams, shall we? We'll start with Parramatta. Finished fourth in the regular season and obviously runners up. The over-under was 13.5. We were both over. They used 27 players, 16 wins, 4 losses. Their away record was 8-4. Fifth in attack, 8th defensively. I think it's pretty much summed up what we talked about during the year. They looked very, very good at times. They knocked off Penrith twice. They knocked off the Storm twice and booked that top 4 spot. But it's the other ones during the year that stressed you out about, well, could they make the top 4 when they lose to the Tigers and the Dogs and those sort of games? And off the back of second phase, they were outstanding in that. All meters, 1 and 2, and kick return, running meters, etc. Their pack was excellent. They were mostly unaffected by Origin. They got a few guys in game one who all got dropped except Paulo. We saw more development this year from their halves. But obviously, week one was a bit of a blow. They got outclassed and they come back through Canberra with a blowout, and then they had to fight back up in Townsville with a game which looked like it was all but done, but the grand final, unfortunately, they were dismantled.
I thought they were the second best team in the competition, clearly all year.
Mm.
They had a yo-yo season, but we knew they had one eye on September.
Yep.
They almost bombed top 4. If they're not in top 4, they don't make grand final. I don't care what anyone says. I think they got to where they deserve. Like, I don't think there's any shame saying that you're the second best team in the comp. But Parramatta fans and Parramatta, as an organisation, aren't in the business of running second. So,
no.
But I just, what happened yesterday, I expected.
And we saw it all. And the other
and
thing
I don't,
well,
I don't hold that against Parramatta. I think it's more about how dominant and good a team Penrith are.
Mm.
That's all.
And unfortunately,
so the challenge is going to be getting back there.
It just carries
next
on.
Year and dealing with the 36 season.
Years
and I don't think the drama for Parramatta is the finals, because I thought they played really, really well last year against Penrith. Could have easily won that game. Penrith go on and win it. This year they run into Penrith twice and get beaten by Penrith twice. There's no shame in that. So Penrith have won two competitions and they've ended Parramatta's season on both occasions.
Mm.
There's no shame in that. But the challenge for Parramatta is how do we ensure now that with the couple of guys that they're losing, that we are back there again next year. That's got to be the challenge.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of the question here. Like, for the year, we saw great development. I mean, Brown and Moses, and the forward pack was huge. Like, Paulo, Campbell Gillard, especially after the Origin rejection, was massive. To have guys like Pennacini come in and play the amount of games he did, he was outstanding. They're going to miss Papali'i. Obviously, that situation looks like it's all but done now. He had another...
We should go. He signed a contract. Go.
Outstanding year. And Elaine obviously come on really strong at the back end of the year, and Madison's role off the bench. But I guess you look at it now and we say, moving from here, Oregon moves on, Reed Marnie, Murata Neokore, Opacek, Papali'i and Stone. So realistically, from that grand final team, they need to replace a starting back row and two middles in their rotation. and what they've bought in, plus the hooker as well. Josh Hodgson, who's coming off two bad years of injury and he's 34 years old, is he going to be able to replicate Reed Marnie defensively and bring more to their attack? Is he going to fit in with the halves? Because that was sort of a problem at the back end of Canberra. I'm sure after the injuries, he's going to have to adjust. Hopgood comes over. He's a good player. But I guess with the way they use their pack right now, he'd probably be part of your middle rotation. But Edge is probably the one that stands out. Like Momasea's coming from Newcastle. He's a talent. He's had some injuries. He's definitely got some ability. But I think, yeah, between him, Makatoa, Elzekim, who you talked about, he's not in their top 30. So they're going to have to...
They might upgrade him.
Maybe upgrade, but I just look, yeah, can you replace those two middles,
Edge and Hooker? Use Madison there and play Brown, like he...
So, yeah, they want to get rid of Brown, so that's what I'm trying to figure out.
I understand
out.
That. They tried this to, year they were trying to get rid of him.
They're still next trying to get rid of him.
Next year they might go, okay. Yeah, well, they'd have someone in mind, well, they, you would think.
Talk behind
maybe to upgrade someone like Elzekim.
Talk behind the scenes that the Tigers are super keen, but with all the Papa Lee stuff going on, they didn't want to bring it up because they didn't want it to try and turn into some sort of trade situation. Yeah. They've made their stance clear there. They want that done. And then if they don't want Brown, they'll have a look at Brown as well.
Yeah, definitely.
The one only name that sort of come to head for another middle was they obviously tried to transfer Marty Tapau in late and he wasn't allowed to. He's off contract and available.
Yeah, he'll be so, there, you think, wouldn't you?
If they go there, you've got a middle, you've got Hopgood, you've got Momasea. You probably
actually, I think you're actually better. It could be potentially better. If Hodgson comes out and plays best footy, they get Tapau, he plays good footy.
I think Papali's going to be pretty hard to replace.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
But yeah, the Marnie one's a big one for me. Like, I think the Dogs have paid overs.
Yeah, great.
But at the same time, there's not enough good nines. And to buy a guy who's 34 off two major injuries worries me that he's going to last 24.
He's a stopgap.
26 games. And for them, I guess they've taken the risk. They've signed him for 2 years, but it's got a club option for the second year.
Aren't they saying next year's going to be 27 rounds, three buys each or something?
Yeah, so if he's not healthy year one, they'll cut ties straight away. But they need to make a real, real point next year of hitting the market. Because internally, I think they've got Rain maybe for another year. They use Brendan Hands in the lower grades, but I haven't seen anyone really pushing through
those
grades at nine.
No,
and nine's a position at the moment where it's really scarce.
Yeah.
And there's not much available, so... Yeah, off contract as well, just before we finish. Sam Lozu is a Australian schoolboy that they have internally. Don't know what's going to happen there. He plays a bit of everything, fullback, centre wing. Naduki, who is a winger, and Hayes Perham, who I actually think is a pretty good player.
I like Hayes Perham.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone else picked him up. He provides, you know, cover for all the outside back positions, can play six, can play one. But, yeah, I guess the question, like you said, with what's going out the door, can they cover it and replicate things next year?
That's right.
So
there's a lot more moving pieces this year, though. So the season isn't going to be as clear cut as it was this year, with pretty much the same group running around again. It'll be different,
but yeah,
because they're going to have to form up and find their style and find some cohesion in key positions.
Interested, like I said, mainly to see
top four. Just get top four and
how Hodgson goes, and then if they can spackfill a few of those spots in the forward pack, and then internally, is it Zakim? Can he step up? Can Makatoa do a little bit more? Is there someone else there? Hollis or a few younger guys that they had for a few years who didn't play as much cup as I thought they would probably hope, but they're going to have to find something internally on the market. But moving on from them, the Panthers first during the year, minor premiers and the overall premiers. 18.5 was the over. We went under thinking they'd probably struggle a bit more with health, which wasn't the case even with that.
Well, Cleary was out for the first month.
Yeah, well, they had a golden run otherwise, though, health
Origin.
Was.
And Origin. Cleary had 5 weeks off at the end.
Yeah.
They should have gone, buddy.
Origin, they got the best sort of draw, worked out really well. I think they played Tigers and Dogs with their second side, which ended up beating both of those teams, so that was great. Full credit to them on that. And they used 32 players, which is more than anyone in the comp because of internationals and Origins. And 20 wins, 4 losses, away record, best in the comp, 10-2. Second defence in attack, only really because Melbourne had some big scores early in the year, and no surprise, they were first in defence, and we saw that. They were the best team by a mile. You look at last year, lose both your centres, Momorowski, Burton, Katewell, May, and then come into this year, Taylor May goes on a wing, Tago goes in our other centre. Seamlessly, those two were outstanding. Crichton transitions back into the centres and has a pretty solid year. Martin into that back row spot continues, to improve his game, and they march on. You just mentioned it, 10 games without Nathan. still won plenty of them. Sullivan filled in. Falls did a job. Seven in Origin. That more players than anyone international. Still won during that period. And then just got good value out of all those guys we mentioned. When Eisenhuth had to play, when Staines played, Smith, Salmon, Jenkins, Hopgood, like they blooded Taruva, Sony, Henry, Blacker, etc. Anytime someone was called upon to do a job, they did their job. They won the 18s, the 21s Cup. They've got lots and lots of depth. And we look at the similar deal again, I guess, with what's going out and what's coming in. Can they replace it? They're obviously doing a good job at pushing guys through, but an even bigger challenge next year. But overall, like when you say who had a good seat, it's hard to not, again, to isolate people. Nathan was very, very good in the limited games. Dylan was clearly the one this year that probably everyone's taken more notice of. He was outstanding.
Mm-hmm. He won the player of the year.
But, you know, I thought Kikiao this year, someone posted on the page not long ago, they didn't really rate it. I think, again, if you watch closer, I rated him less a few years ago. I think this year he did a lot of things that I didn't think were possible were in his game. I thought he added a lot more of those 1% plays to his game.
Mm.
And he wasn't just the left edge back row who was happy to run hard or crash over inside. I thought kick pressures, line speed, just a lot of small stuff coming into his game. I hope that continues when he goes to the Bulldogs. But yeah, Yoey as well, outstanding. Look, but we talk about all those kids. They're props. Fish less games this year, but excellent all around their squad. And anyone who come in and did a job, to see Taylan, to see Tago, they were brilliant as a whole. Yep. But ins next year, again, we make that talk like we did last year about how can this stay. Arpy goes to the Tigers, Kikau goes to the Bulldogs, Sullivan, so you lose a seven, Hopgood, Jennings out the door. They're going to replace, obviously, Arpy, as we know, with that combination of Kenny and Sony.
Yeah.
So,
but does this mean they relinquish the belt or they just come back to the field a little bit?
That's it.
Because look at how dominant
they are. That's the question we're making. Garner, I think, is actually a pretty handy replacement. Yeah. I think he's shown good flashes in a bad side.
Agree.
So him coming in there.
Sonny Luke, I think, will fill the role with Kenny.
Yeah, no, just have to,
that's okay.
What we talked about, move him around.
It's just more depth.
To try and help him. A
bit of depth.
And then you look like we talked about. You know, I think Reiki wouldn't surprise me if he got upgraded. He's a guy I think can play first grade. They've got the Puru twins, Lindsay Smith, Eddie Blacker, Tom Jenkins, Taruva, Jack Cole, who won the 21s player of the year, played Cup. They're pushing a lot of guys through. Do they play next year? I don't know. How they fill in a few more gaps. They've got a few guys still off. Salmon's not signed yet. There's talk he will go to the Bulldogs.
Interesting.
Kurt Falls still not signed. Surprised me when they lost O'Sullivan. I thought straight away because he's friends with Nathan and a good cheap backup option. I thought they would have been keen as mustard to keep him around. Yeah. But still no offer. Eisenhuth, I think, is extended now. They've got him listed here as off, but I think he signed a one-year extension in Christian Crichton. But you look at, again, who they pushed in. You know, Fakatu Mafi, Dayon Amatuan. They played a lot of guys up, you know, in those positions. Iongi, Taruva, like, they could probably afford to lose a Christian Crichton or that. But in terms of what pushes in, like we said, from that grand final side there last year, you've probably got Garner getting first look at one of those back row spots, unless he, you know, lets a Sorensen start in the back row. But I think he'll keep him in his middle rotation with Lenu off the bench. You'll have those two nines, Kenny starting, and then obviously off the bench, Sony. And then they've probably got to have one more player on the bench once you push somebody in.
I think they'll be okay.
But
motivation, injury, origin, a lot of things to go into it. But again, top four and give yourself a crack.
Do you see, is anyone from that Cup team for you that you think could take a bigger role or really come to the fore next year?
Well, I thought Hopgood. I think he'll do that for Parramatta.
And he's gone to
Parramatta. Sonny Luke, definitely.
If they need another middle out of Lindsay, Blacker, Eisenhut, you think those three? Well,
they're all capable, but I don't think they're bench middles, NRL bench middles.
Because you obviously have to
develop into NRL players. You don't just become one.
Backline unchanged, 1, 6, 7. 13, your two props, Martin on one side of the field, like they're still pretty stable.
Yeah.
And more importantly, we said it last year, they had to make a decision, like a lot of good teams do, on where you invest your cash. They've done it in 6, 7, 13, and their props.
Yeah.
To make sure. So it's a good base.
Mm.
But no doubt, again, I think they're top four quality. It's just a matter of, again, origin, injuries. Like if they had the year they had this year, they're unharmed.
I just think they're the best team in the comp until they're not.
Yeah. But while you've got that base...
They could have won yesterday by 50 if they wanted to.
Mm. They've got that sort of Melbourne set up now where they've decided on that sort of key core and they're just going to keep filling around it.
Yep.
So, like we said...
And they have... It's quite easy for them to attract because they're so successful.
And they're producing.
This is what happened.
Yeah, so now you can get guys for less or find guys like a Garner or that are happy to move on for a little bit less and play.
Correct.
And then also internally. So, you know, I'm interested to see if Reiki gets that opportunity or if, you know, Blacker and these sort of guys get a look in what they do. And most of those outside backs are obviously going to be waiting for an opportunity because the back line is intact, but they're going to have Jenkins and Taruva and Ioane all sitting there waiting for an opportunity. And then you look at that flag team at the back end of the year, you know. Riley Smith has wraps, still need to see a bit more, but you liked Lazardi, Atavali Lazardi. You played some cup and Iceland.
I'm glad he didn't play against us.
Yeah, Dayon Amatawani, like I said, Will Fakatamafi. They had some really good guys in the Puru Twins pushing through, and MG's young bloke played a little bit of both this year, so there's a really good core group there.
Yeah.
That if they do the right things over the next couple of years, even with like Mason Teague, their SG ball captain, and Katoa, the highly rated seven moving on, that's what happens when you've got guys there blocking that path. But if they keep producing, hopefully they just keep filling around it. Same deal again. Out of those guys that are left, pending who they sign or who's available, it wouldn't surprise me if they grabbed one or two more guys, just cheapies, and filled in. But there you go. Wrap up of those two teams and their seasons. And again, congratulations to the Penrith Panthers, the 2022 NRL Premiers. I guess the last bit here is the World Cup squads were named today. Australian side thoughts? Has anyone surprised you that missed out besides, say, somebody like Dylan?
Well, Edwards and Hines were the two. I was like, how did they get in?
I'm surprised he didn't take... Well, again, I always knew that Lodge wasn't going to get picked for said reasons, but I thought they should have probably considered that a bit more with the middles we have compared to taking a Collins or... Again, I knew they were always going to pick Jake, but I wouldn't. That's just me. Thought they might have taken Hudson Young, but he didn't, especially his Canberra links. He's done it before where he's taken someone that surprises.
Yeah.
Overall, otherwise, I'm not really surprised of who he picked, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
Thoughts? Are they the favourites, do you reckon? I still
think. Yeah, I think they are, but I think $1.40 is very short.
I still like New Zealand.
So do I, at the odds, especially.
Speaking of that, bluebet.com.au. If you're going to bet with anyone, do it with the True Blue Bookie. Thank you to them for another great year. We still have one pending charity bet. The other one, unfortunately, did not get up. We have $1,102 in the kitty and I think a potential collect of another 150 or so in a few weeks' time from New Zealand. So if that happens, hopefully we get over the $1,200 mark. But again, huge thanks to them for this year. And they've already got the 2023 futures market up. And to your point, they, along with most I think I've seen today, have Penrith, again, favourites at $4. The Roosters are second on that line there. With Brandon Smith coming and most of that team being intact, $7. Storm at $9 surprises me with the changes they've got. Parramatta at 10, Souths 11. The one that really got me, Cowboys all the way down to 11. I thought with what they did this year, keeping basically that whole side together and being so young that maybe they would have been somewhere in that top four. But they're not. The Sharks outside even further than that, 12. Broncos at 15. I think the big thing I took away from this is the sides they've got in the top seven or eight pretty much reflect what I talked to you about the other day. I can't really see the top eight changing much next year, if I'm being honest.
Well, it always does.
Well, one or two, but yeah, like they've got Manly on the outside looking in there and Canberra, you know, Dogs, Titans, and all the way down at the bottom. Your longest odds is the West Tigers at $81, even with the inclusions of Papali'i and Arpi Coruscant, they lost a lot. The Dolphins, second last, equal with the Warriors and the Knights at $67. And probably the one that a lot of people are talking about with Seraldo, Marnie, Kikau going there is the Dogs to make the eight. They're $21 to win the comp. So, yeah. That's the futures thanks to bluebet.com.au on the World Cup. As you spoke about before, heavy favourites still Australia at $1.45, but New Zealand, who were a lot longer odds before the year kind of played out the way it did, they're now into $4.80. England a third at $11. I don't agree with that. I probably think Samoa are the third best team. They're at $12. Tonga are at 15. I really don't see anyone winning it outside of Australia and New Zealand, if I'm being honest. But yeah. I think New Zealand are the real value for me. You've got some huge outsiders, no surprise. Italy, Greece, Jamaica, Lebanon, all those teams, 500s, not happening. But your only real big smoky, pending if the draw really worked out, but I can't see it with the spine, would be a Samoa or a Tonga. I think Samoa are probably a little bit more settled, but I just can't see it. I think it makes it a hell of a lot more competitive with the guys that have decided to play for those teams in terms of the quarters and the semis, but I still think it's Australia or New Zealand. But at this point, I just think Hughes, Dylan Brown, Joey Manu, but it's the forward pack. With what we've sort of lost, I think we're very mobile. I mean, we've still got some good guys in our pack, but looking at them, to be able to have Isaiah Papali'i, Tarpanay, Nelson, Fish, Layot, like they've got a red hot forward pack.
Oh, they do, yeah.
I think your only real question is back line. Manu's a lock, but, you know, wingers, it's probably going to be Mulatalo and Dallin, so you've got good yardage. Centres, Hiku probably gets a jersey, but the other spot is sort of the one that worries you. You know, you got Chris Going, who's a solid player, but he's not a world beater. They played Murata there early in the year because they got so many forwards, but I guess, again, if you win that middle, you can probably afford to kind of spack fill another spot like that, but I don't think anyone's got a better forward pack than they do. And with that spine, one of their best spines ever had, I think they've got a huge opportunity to win this World Cup.
Yeah.
So
saying Jamin Salmon's going to be signed by the Panthers again.
Well, there you go. So waiting to see what happens, but they don't have many left. Like I said, off contract, I had a look here.
He's going to go to the Bulldogs, but he wants to sign for less and stay at the Panthers.
Well, there you go. So if they get him, it leaves Kurt, Eisenhuth and Christian Crichton. And like I said, Christian Crichton was good for him in Cup, but money-wise, they've got a lot of those other kids there that are pushing through. Eisenhuth, same deal. Like, for him at his point in his career, surely you take a lower offer and to stay. You don't want to go anywhere else, surely. And the Kurt one surprises me. Again, it's not because we know him personally. I just think from their perspective, O'Sullivan was very handy, but they have a guy that you've developed for your system for the last few years who's a really good footballer who you can keep on the love side of things, because I'm sure he doesn't really want to move anywhere. I thought surely they would have kept him as their main backup, and why Jack Cole is still developing and coming through, and they've got some other guys pushing through there, but I really thought once Sullivan went, that one would be a fait accompli, that they would not let him go.
Yeah.
So interesting to see what sort of happens there with them, but yeah, excited for this World Cup now that the season's over in 2 weeks' time. Kicks off on the 15th of October, I think.
Yeah, it'll be good.
So that would be Sunday morning here. I think it kicks off 2:30 in the Arvo there. That'd be like very early or midnight for us, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah. Something like that. First game is England. They're playing Samoa, and looking at those pools like we talked about, I think your quarters could be very, very good with those guys. I had a look at it here. You could potentially have Tonga versus England, New Zealand, Fiji, Samoa versus Papua, and then it'll probably be Australia versus either Ireland or Lebanon. That one's probably not as interesting, but then you know, your semis, if it's Australia, New Zealand and Samoa, Tonga, with who's decided to declare for certain nations, I think that's outstanding. But what do you reckon, next week we do our season awards and a bit of a World Cup preview?
Yeah, we can do.
And we've got something coming up some stage this week. We're going to jump on and have a chat with one of our listeners, Meal, mate, yeah. And maybe talk about the World Cup a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So that'll be up at some stage. But yeah, next week we'll have a talk through the tournament.
Yeah, Mike's a journalist at The Roar and runs the Chasing Kangaroos podcast, so we're going to jump on and do a bit of a dual podcast with him and Michael Carboni as well, I think.
Yep, I think he might have kicked that off, Michael Carboni, the Chasing Kangaroos, and Mike is on board as well. But yeah, he's been a long-term listener. They've been going through each country with different people. So Robinson they talked about for France and Luai for Samoa, and then they've obviously decided to hit us up to talk about the Australian squad.
Yeah.
And thoughts and a little bit about the World Cup. So
yep,
that'll be out. And then, yeah, we'll do a bit of a run through next week. Not going, you know, squad by squad, but I reckon we do sort of what we did for the Sevens. We'll have a quick look through and see if we can...
A quick look through for us is 2 hours.
Yeah, won't be 2 hours. But we'll have a pick of the pools and see who we think comes out on top.
Yeah.
And then maybe do a little bit throughout. Again, it's going to be hard to watch those games, but we'll drop one in every now and then.
Yeah.
While there's football. But there you go. In-depth breakdown of the grand final, Penrith Panthers 2022 premiers, a review of the seasons of the Panthers and Parramatta, two teams that should be back up and competing next year. See how they adjust with those changes, and a little bit of World Cup talk and some odds brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, do it with the True Blue Bookie. Thanks again to them for supporting us and our charity account, Bears of Hope, $1,102 coming your way, and hopefully a little bit more pending that New Zealand futures bet. But there you go, Boxhead.
Yep.
Couple of shows to go and we're done.
Sounds good.
So for everybody out there, you've got a week off from football next week and then the World Cup's back. How good. But for now, I was going to say enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league. There's none on, but in general.
Enjoy your week,
mate. Just enjoy your week. And thanks for listening.
Bring it on. Give us more. Where are you going? What's going on here? Is that it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.